Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Cohen's Corner. Today, we are so excited to be joined by our wonderful guest, Maggie Gray. She is the co-host of the Moose and Maggie Show, which is heard middays on WFAN 5 days a week. And prior to that, she worked at Sports Illustrated as a digital host and reporter for 8 years. And so, Maggie, we are so happy to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode.
Oh, Elizabeth and Jake, thank you for having me. You guys are great. I really appreciate it. Thanks for letting me come in and talk sports with you guys.
Yeah, awesome. We're really excited. I guess, you know, this is a Mets-focused podcast, but we also talk about like general baseball topics. But I do kind of want to start with some Mets-focused questions. I guess, so we know you grew up in the Binghamton area in upstate New York. And so I guess one thing just to like start us off, maybe could you walk us through kind of how you started out becoming a baseball fan or a Mets fan specifically? Because I know everyone always has different stories of how they came to the sport and to the team in general.
Yeah, definitely. So I am 100% from AA Binghamton and grew up there, and actually once told Fred Wilpon, "Hi, I'm Maggie. I'm from AA Binghamton." And I think he got a slight kick out of that. The Binghamton Mets came to my hometown in like 1992, which probably feels like BC to you guys, but I was like in elementary school at the time, and I used to go to baseball games with my grandmother, actually. She was a really big baseball fan, grew up a Brooklyn Dodger fan, and she used to take me to minor league baseball games. And then from there, you know, you follow these guys and track them to the major leagues, and you kind of feel like this cool, not ownership, but like this cool sort of, I was there in the beginning, like watching some of these Benny Agbayanis and, you know, Jason Isringhausen and like Butch Husky, the spring training hero. And so it was really cool. And you know, it's why the minor leagues, I think, are so important, because without them, without the Binghamton Mets, I don't know if I would have become a Mets fan. So I have nothing but great memories of attending minor league baseball games and then eventually going to Shea and then eventually to Citi Field.
I was going to say, my grandmother also grew up a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. And that's then when they left Brooklyn, she became a Mets fan. And that was how my dad kind of came. So I feel like there's generations, it kind of gets passed along. I've heard of, you know, other people whose, you know, grandparents were for like the Dodgers or the New York Giants and then like pass along their fandom that way. So cool to hear some of similar baseball lineage in our families.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's like, I think baseball, like I think all sports is a little, you know, I think it starts with that. Either you're become a fan of who your parents or grandparents were a fan of, or you reject that fully and you say, I'm not going to be
the opposite fandom. Yeah.
Who my parents are, and I'm going to go in a totally different direction. And so I kind of have a little of both. Like my grandmother was taking me to baseball games when I was a kid. So, you know, she's the one who introduced me to my love of baseball. My stepfather though was a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I became a Buffalo Bills fan. And this is right in the era, like when these two teams were the best in the NFL.
Yeah.
And so I have both sides, like the love of it. And then also sort of, I don't want to be what my parents are, so I'm going to go with the opposite team.
I was going to bring it up later, but now that you brought it up, you being a Buffalo Bills fan, the other day I was listening to you guys on the radio, and I don't know if it was a caller that called in and complained like that you don't act like a Giants or Jets fan. And you were kind of like, well, I'm not going to be a fraud. Like, I'm going to root for the team I like. So congratulations on a great season from the Bills. And it's got to be kind of annoying to always have to defend that you're a Buffalo Bills fan, considering you get a lot of Giants and Jets talk in the area you're in.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing about that, which is hilarious, because like there's been nothing interesting about the Bills for like the last 25 years. And then I get this job at WFAN and like all of a sudden
here they come. The yeah.
It's like, okay, where was this? But what's interesting about that is, yeah, especially at the fan, like you have to be so authentic or else you're going to get smoked out. I mean, some people I think put on maybe personas or play up their personality maybe more than others as just sort of a performance part of it. But in terms of like your fandom, it would be impossible to fake this. Like if I came on one day and was like, you know what, I grew up a Buffalo Bills fan, but I'm going to make this calculation now, or because I'm on the fan, I'm going to root for the Jets or root for the Giants. Like, it's just, it's not going to work. But I feel that there's a way to sort of, because I talk to these fans all day and because we cover the teams, the Jets and Giants, so closely, I feel like I feel their pain. Like that is real. When the general managers screw up or when they lose big games, like I really do feel like I can channel what the fans are going through. And so, you know, I've become now really passionate about these teams. Like, I hate that word passionate, but like I have become, because you're following them so closely. Now we've gotten to know the major players in terms of the front office. We've got to interview the owners. We've gotten to meet a lot of the players. And so you become like really invested, even though I didn't like technically grow up, you know, rooting for the Jets or Giants.
Yeah. It's funny that you talk about like, you know, the different personalities and what people bring to their job as radio hosts at the Fan. I guess on that note, I'm kind of wondering, so I know you've been, you know, working various sports media jobs for most of your life. And I guess I'm just curious, like, who were some of your sports media influences or like inspirations growing up? Was there any one or few people that you kind of looked up to as someone you wanted to emulate?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you guys are like too, you might be too young for this. I don't even know how old you are, but I'm just assuming you're much younger than me because you seem much cooler than me. But I don't know if SportsCenter, like if you guys maybe like, was that so influential when you guys were younger also? Like when I was growing up, SportsCenter was huge. It was like the pinnacle job. Even when I was going to journalism school in college, like that's what I wanted to do. 6 o'clock SportsCenter, 11 o'clock SportsCenter was like, was it. So for me, it was people like Linda Cohn, Robin Roberts. Like these were women who had like reached the all time, you know, in my opinion. And, you know, I also really appreciated journalists like Andrea Kramer and obviously Hannah Storm then went to SportsCenter. I don't know if you guys ever heard the show NBA Inside Stuff. This woman, Willow Bay, she was on this show with Ahmad Rashad. Now I feel like I'm pulling out the archives here, but there were a lot of really amazing women who really, I mean, really broke down barriers that I could sort of walk in the door and walk in behind them. It wasn't even just the women on TV necessarily, or like the sports babe, but who was on radio, but even like Christine Brennan, who was a columnist for USA Today, who was really influential, not because I'm writing, but just because she was a woman who had access. You know, she was the first woman who was in the Miami Dolphins locker room. It just, those women to me were like larger than life. And I can't imagine how much pressure they must've been feeling all the time to basically be the first all the time. And I just appreciate that they went through that because it's because of them that I'm able to do what I do.
Yeah. And considering how influential SportsCenter was and sports media was for you, do you kind of have to just like pinch yourself now to see where you are and that you're able to kind of now do the same job in a way and be a sports personality on the air? Like, do you have to kind of be like, wow, like this is crazy that this is my life now?
Honestly, Jake, like if I thought about that every day, I would not be able to get out of bed, let alone do the show. Like it's weird because I can't think about, like, I think about the audience in that I think about what do you guys or what does the audience want to hear every day, or trying to tap into like, what are you talking about with your friends and how can we get into that conversation and sort of mirror that? Like the text thread you have going with your friends, like we kind of want to be there. We want to be on the next bar stool over from you when we could all do that and just be a part of that conversation. And so that way I think about the audience, but if I actually thought about like the sheer number of people who are listening to the show, I think I would totally freak out. Like I don't know. I don't think I have stage fright anymore, but that would lead me to have like a really colossal meltdown. So I really don't think about that because I'm just like, all right, next show, next show, next show, next segment, next segment. And it just sort of, the train just keeps like moving.
Right. I mean, I guess it's interesting because, you know, you may not be thinking about the amount of people that are listening, but you do kind of get that feedback in a way. I guess a lot of people who, you know, may work on TV or kind of broadcast it, they don't necessarily get immediate feedback from listeners or viewers. You know, if you're doing a TV show, you don't necessarily, for a sports show, you're not having people in the audience saying like, hey, I disagree with what you just said. But on the radio, I feel like what you guys do, you almost get that instant feedback on what you've been saying. So that must be kind of interesting to have, you know, you're saying your opinions, you're talking about the news in sports, but then you're also getting people immediately responding to what you just said, both, you know, I guess on social media, but also literally live on the air. So that's
it's wild.
You know, whole another area. I think even different than like TV or theater, I'm sure it's kind of a different feeling to get used to.
Oh my gosh. It's ridiculous. Like if you really step back and think about what happens, like I give people a phone number over and over again so they can call up and tell me how much I suck. It's like, who does that? What job is this? But no, I mean, the radio station has such a history with the callers that it's something where like my thing with the callers is it's like how to sort of like use them for entertainment. And this is something I still really struggle with because you know, Moose and I really do like a pretty, I don't say like hardcore sports show, but like we're pretty sports all the time, you know? And we do like, we try to do some entertaining stuff too, but like we're pretty, we kind of stick to like the big sports stories of each day. It's just sort of what we do. But I want to try to use the callers more as an entertainment vehicle. And it's like kind of hard because I'm always bracing for someone to tell me how wrong I am, how terrible I am. You know, you're always sort of like answer the call and then like, you know, put your fingers in your ears and like hope for the best. But yeah, it's an interesting balance and one that I still don't think that I've gotten very good at. And that I still feel like I could, there's a lot of room to grow there in sort of my interaction with the callers.
And you bring up Moose, so I want to talk about him a little bit.
Yeah.
So sometimes for me, I know he's a big Yankee fan.
Yeah.
Sometimes he comes off as an aggressive Met hater. I don't know if that's just because I'm a diehard Mets fan and sometimes he says stuff that's the truth that maybe I don't want to hear. But what do you ever get that sense or no? Is he kind of just spitting the truth?
No, I don't think he's a hater. I think that sometimes Moose likes to, and this is just like in a friendly way, like I think he knows like the certain buttons to push that get Mets fans really, really riled up. And so he knows like that he can push those buttons. And sometimes he can really like strike a nerve with Mets fans. But I know that because I know him so well, he's not like deep down harboring anything towards the Mets at all. He's just doing it for fun and because he can.
And because I remember it was when the Mets were trying to sign Bauer and he just keeps, I'm driving. I just keep hearing him say, oh, that's it. The Mets are getting Bauer. I'm like, stop saying that. It's not going to happen. And honestly, now I'm glad he was right. But I mean, glad he wasn't right. I mean, that we didn't get him. But what's your whole take on the Bauer situation?
How nuts was that? So like we were on the air when all that stuff went down. It was a Friday when like the merchandise on his website started saying like, you know, can't wait to pitch in New York. And it was really bizarre and also like really kind of odd to work through in real time on the air because you don't like, you see people are sending you stuff on Twitter, which is actually, I really appreciate the audience for that. For like, as much as Twitter can be an awful hellscape, sometimes they'll send us things which are really helpful, which was like screen grabs of the website and stuff like that. So that day the callers and the listeners were actually amazing, but it was weird. And it was like, is this a troll job? Because if it is, like, who the hell is this guy? Like, why do you all of a sudden want to turn an entire fan base against you? It makes no sense from a marketing standpoint. Especially, it was so bizarre. You know, I'm torn on Bauer because I think that he is an awesome, amazing pitcher. And I think he would have put the Mets in a different stratosphere. And I think he would have been a story almost every single day. And I think if you were in that clubhouse, and like, I get where guys are coming from. Like he shuts one eye the other day and then hits a pitcher on the shoulder. Or like
he hit a guy. Yeah. That could have been his head. I saw that.
What a clown.
Dude, total clown. And just like real bush league and just bizarre. And so what happens obviously is that he does that. And then every single person who does a Zoom, like every player who does a Zoom that day, or maybe the next day, is going to get asked about it by reporters. And that's why they say like, is this guy actually a good teammate? Like, sure, you're going to win games with him, but if you're constantly having to answer for him or try to, even if you don't comment, now that's a part of the story. You know, it's like, it puts his teammates in this really terrible position. So I'm torn because I could see the Mets really getting over the, like, I could see that putting them like really over the top with Bauer, but man, this guy would have been such a massive headache.
You would have been good for you guys. I had something to talk about all the time.
Oh. I know. I mean, that would have been.
Like, you do anyway, even without him, though. Like
totally. But yes, he would have been. I'm trying to think of like the last person who was that, I say polarizing.
Polarizing.
Odell. I mean, I caught the end of the Odell. Like when I got hired, you know, he got traded not long after that. They signed him and then they didn't sign him.
We didn't sign him just to trade him.
Then signed him,
Mr. Gettleman.
The Lil Wayne interview and like all that stuff. It was just sort of constant. And I'm like an Odell defender, but for some things, but like it was pretty constant. Bauer would have been constant.
You know, I just think there's certainly a place for marketing yourself, promoting the game, but also if a player is themselves inherently a narrative and often a negative one, that can be very exhausting, I think, for everyone involved with the team. And I think the Mets, I don't know if they needed that additional constant narrative added to like everything else they're doing, which so far has been very positive. So, you know, I feel like at this point, I'm already exhausted hearing about Bauer just from what he's doing with the Dodgers, because everyone on Mets Twitter is still talking about it. So I'm like, I feel
we
like
talk
I
about
need
him
exhale.
Every episode, and then we say we're never going to talk about him again, and then it.
That's
comes
what I'm saying. I'm like, that's what I'm saying. And can you imagine if he actually were on the Mets? Like, I just feel like he's just created this inherent narrative for himself that everything he does is now going to be a story because he wants to promote, and all the things he does with like Momentum, it's all about like promoting every aspect of the game. And so he's going to have attention focused on him for everything he does, because that's something he believes in, is players, you know, attracting attention for what they're doing. So, but consequently, when he, you know, does things that attract attention in a negative way, like pitching with one eye open and actually hitting someone that could have caused an injury, I'm exhausted about talking about him, and it's not even opening day. So like, can you imagine how we're going to feel at the end of the season? Who knows what's going to happen like 6 months
Hopefully the Mets,
now,
when they come to town in August or September or whatever, hopefully the Mets shell him. Oh, that would be the best thing ever. I hope he closes an eye and we just wreck him.
I just hope that the Mets beat the Dodgers in the playoffs. Like that would be dynamite. See, that's the thing though about like, listen, I think baseball players, like athletes, I'm with you, Elizabeth, like they should totally market themselves. They should absolutely, like, I'm a big use your platform person. Like, I think whatever, you know, you want to use, like these careers, like they're really short, you know, in the span of like a whole lifetime. So if you need to use that to like maximize your earning potential or maximize your exposure, whatever it is, like I'm all for it. But like, I'm having a little trouble with Bauer because he's a guy who's like, no, like I'm into, you know, like the mechanics of pitching and I want to teach people how to pitch and like I'm all about the game. And that like you kind of disrespect the game though too. Like you close an eye and you hit somebody. So like, what is your brand, man? And like the other thing is you get all touchy when people ask you about things that you did. No one's like pushing send on your tweets but you, you know, like you know what you're doing. So like in some ways, I'm like, you can't have it both ways. You want to be out there, you want to build a brand, yet when you do things that are warrant criticism, then all of a sudden, you know, you get like really defensive and like super, you know, super touchy about it. So I don't know if he's figured out exactly what he wants his brand to be, but I don't know. I saw him and Noah go back and forth on a little, and it kind of made me, just as the fan in me, just like, forgot how awesome Noah is. Like, way to be that dude, you know, have our back.
I miss him. I can't wait for him to be back, honestly.
Him and Stroman. I love how they were going at him. I love that. Oh, because once he didn't sign with us, it's like, all right, you're against us. I hate you, you know?
I know. I feel that way too. I feel that way too. And I do love it with Noah because, like, I would just want Noah to come back, like, better than ever, you know? I've always wanted Noah to be that sort of ace or, well, 1A because no one will ever top DeGrom. But I want his career with the Mets to work out so badly. I don't know if it's going to, but I want it.
So I have very high hopes for him this year. I think when he comes back, I don't know. I guess obviously we'll see with Tommy John, but I have a funny feeling that the way he's endeared himself to the fan base here, that he may end up sticking around after this season and hopefully pitching well. We'll see.
They've been saying that he's been looking pretty good in his bullpens, but yeah, that was nuts with him and the Bauer stuff, but enough with the Bauer headache. I know we say it every episode, but we really got to stop talking about
this. We're going to say once again this week, we are finally, maybe this will finally put a moratorium on it.
Until next
but
week.
I guess, Maggie, it's funny.
Week.
You were talking.
You should have like some kind of like equivalent of like a wheel of death or something. And like whoever brings up Bauer has to like spin the wheel and just like do something like, yeah.
That would be pretty fun.
That's a good idea. We should do
some like disincentive for doing so. Yeah, maybe we'll add that.
Whoever
in.
Brings
if
up Bauer has
end
to
up
edit.
Saying that
whoever brings up Bauer has to edit the show that week. That's our new rule. I think that's
there we go.
But all right, enough with the Bauer headache. Let's talk about somebody that I think probably brings us all a lot of joy, and that's Mr. Smile Francisco Lindor. So I remember when Lindor first got traded. I believe you guys were in the middle of a show and you had Ian Rappaport on. And the news broke from what I remember. And Ian Rappaport was on. I just remember you going, oh my God, it's happening. Oh my God. And that's my reaction too, as a Mets fan. And I'm like, and now Ian Rappaport's a Mets fan. And I love that because he came on to talk football and all of a sudden the conversation just flipped. Yeah. So just take me through what your initial reaction was and what you're thinking of Frankie so far.
Oh my gosh. That was one of the most memorable days I've ever had at the fan. It was incredible. I listened back to it and I'm cringing because I'm just saying, oh my God, over and over again. But that was a moment where it was just pure fandom. Like I didn't see it coming. You know, we're still kind of getting used to Steve Cohen being the owner. Like with the Wilpons, this would have never happened. And to have Ian on the phone and he's like texting with his brother while he's doing the interview, and like Jeff Passan and all these baseball insiders are just like tweet after tweet after tweet. And it's just getting better and better and better because we weren't sure who they were going to have to give up, even though I love Jimenez just like everyone else. That's one.
Me too.
That one.
I still miss him a little bit. Maybe a lot.
That, like,
I'm very
player that does everything. Yeah.
It was just when he was in like playing shortstop last year, I was just like, this is like beautiful. Like these, like you're fielding like a routine grounder. And I just am like totally in awe of you. But anyway, so that one hurt, but like, we weren't sure, remember at the time, like what was going to be, you know, the return. And so we're kind of like celebrating because it wasn't anyone who, you know, we felt like really were getting fleeced. And then the Cookie Carrasco news came on top of it and was like, oh my God, you know, like, again, I'm doing it again. It's all I can say because I was so shocked that day. And that's actually like one of the best parts about doing this job. Like when a big local story breaks and either you're on the air or you're about to be or whatever, it, like, that's the adrenaline. That's just amazing. And that's like what you kind of live for. Unfortunately, you get the opposite too, like when famous people pass away, and that's really jarring and it can be really difficult to kind of like navigate that on the fly. Like we had Hank Aaron pass away an hour into our show. We had Don Shula pass away an hour into our show. So that can be really tough. But when it's those big blockbuster moments, and like, I appreciate that because like, Jake, you remember that like I was on the air for that, and that's a really cool moment. And so you just want to do right by the audience. And I just had to, I like couldn't contain my excitement that day. And then news starts happening.
I remember, I'm listening. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's happening. Oh my God. And I'm thinking the same thing. And it was just nice to have, cause you know, in the mid days it used to be Joe and Evan. So I'd listen to it cause they're Mets fan. I'd love hearing, listen to their takes on the Mets. So to have you on, to be able to hear a real Mets fan's reaction, like that was nice.
No problem. And then it was hilarious because I think Moose like asked Ian Rappaport like an NFL question. I was just like, wait, I'm out. Like, ask him whatever.
Hold on. I was going to say, one of my favorite parts about listening to The Fan is hearing those like live reactions to trades on the air. And in addition to your like reaction to that trade, also, you know, non-baseball related, but one of my favorite things from recent memory was hearing Evan Roberts' reaction to the James Harden trade to the Nets live on the air. That was like one of the funniest things I've ever heard, I swear. And you know what's funny? Because I had seen a tweet, and I'm not claiming any like, not saying that I broke this news to him by any stretch of the imagination. I did actually tag him in a tweet about that trade, like 30 seconds to like right before he mentioned it on the air. So I'm like, I wonder if it was my tweet that he saw that broke the news. It's possible.
You should tell people that.
I have
nobody,
no proof.
Nobody's
going
to know if you tell people that.
I don't know. But I have to say, that's one of my favorite things, especially because all of you, you know, you guys don't hold back with your, like, you definitely approach things from an analytical sports perspective, but you also don't hold back with emotions either. And to hear, you know, your reaction to the Lindor trade and Evan's reaction to the Harden trade, where he, and now he's, you know, all on the Harden train, obviously, because he's been fantastic for the Nets. But that was another really, you know, just kind of great example of what, you know, in a way, radio is almost, it's really like live theater for the ears. And so you're really just and you know, reacting to things that happen in the moment and just creating this very unique experience that you can't like bottle up. I don't know. It's not the same. Reacting to things live, I just feel like is such a, it must be such a rush for all of you. And it's such so much fun for listeners, especially when those big events happen. And then, you know, the host is like, okay, so I'm a fan of this team, but I'm also hosting the show right now. So like, what do I do to express this out loud?
No, you don't want to miss like anything obvious. It's like, all right, you know, what happened? And I'm reacting to this and like making sure I'm not missing like the story. But the Harden thing was hilarious. I was actually really surprised because there were like a lot, we have, you know, Nets fans work at the radio station, obviously. I don't know a lot of Nets fans in real life, but Nets fans work at the radio station and they were all like super anti-Harden trade. And I couldn't understand it because I was on it from the beginning. I'm like, this is amazing. This is amazing. Like, again, Jared Allen, I'll probably a lot like Andres Jimenez. Okay, hurts a little bit, right? Stings a little bit because he's a homegrown guy and he panned out, you know, and you, that's all you hope for. But it was like, it's James Harden. And again, Evan was like, dribble,
MVP.
Fat. Yeah. I know. But it's like, what makes you guys think he can only play one way? Like, that was my big thing. It's like, you, when you're getting to the top 10, top five players in the league. They're so good. Like, they're so talented. They can play all different types of ways. Not every player can, but those guys can. And I just love watching the Nets. Like, I love watching the Nets. I'm loving watching the Knicks right now for a totally different reason, you know?
Julius!
I know, I got the game recorded right now. So, like, the fact that we actually get to talk basketball is great, because my first couple of years at the Fan, so this is my fourth year at the Fan, and the first, like, two plus, there was just not really a lot interesting going on with the basketball teams. Like, we talk about the Knicks, you know, futility. You know, I remember being on the air when they traded Porzingis. I wasn't on the air, but I think I just got off the air and they traded Porzingis. Like, that was a big moment, but I think the Knicks fans had already kind of been done with Porzingis a little bit, or they weren't in love with him the way they were when he first got to the Knicks. So I just love that we could talk basketball. It's great.
I love that we can talk basketball here. And two, like, yeah, I guess Porzingis, he had torn his ACL, so he was out for a while. So we kind of lost that taste, you know, because yeah. Right before he got hurt, he was playing so well. But to touch a little bit on that Nets trade, I don't know, when that happened, I was just, my one buddy, Chris, he's a big Nets fan. He actually went to the game last night, the Nets-Knicks game, and he was just really upset. And I agreed at the time that just because they're rebounding, they needed Jared Allen, and giving up Caris LeVert, like a couple homegrown guys, really sucked. But like you said, it is similar to the Lindor trade in that way, just because you're getting a top 10 player in the sport. Like, you have to give up something to get something. You can't just expect you're going to get this guy for free. And even though people at the time thought that maybe the Mets fleeced the Indians, I mean, Rosario, although he had three errors in center field today, he could still turn out to be a good player. And Jimenez, I think, is going to be a really good player. And you don't know about the two prospects they got either. So you always have to give something to get something.
Definitely. But, you know, I think that what the only thing we can ask for our teams, because, like, you know, we see them in such varying states, right? There's the rebuild state. There's the tear it down state. There's the building it back up. There's the going for it. Like, we are so used to, as sports fans, and now because fans are just so much smarter now, you know, I think than you can kind of tell the nuance with your team, you know, like, where are we? Like, where are we really? Are we really contenders? Are we really just trying to hang on? And I think what I appreciate is when teams go for it. You know, I thought the Jets were tanking all of last year. I could tell from week one that they were tanking. But, you know, if you're this close, if you're the Mets or if you're the Nets and you're this close, you have to do everything you can to put yourself over the top. You don't know how long this window is going to be open. So I appreciate general managers and owners who go for it and take these big swings, because the worst regret is not taking the swing and then coming up short or never really giving your team, like, the best chance to win a title. I mean, that's what it's about.
Yeah, look at the Nets. They might win the championship this year for all we know. And, you know, the Mets, I don't know about the World Series, but I feel like they're really in a good position to contend. I've been very impressed so far. I think, you know, the offense always takes a little bit longer, I think, than the pitching maybe in spring training to come around. But I've been very excited about what I've seen. Yeah, I guess just going back to one thing I wanted to ask as well about your work on the Fan. I guess I'm curious, like, what kind of, you know, I know you mentioned that you obviously have a lot of sometimes news breaking on the air, but there's also things to react to from, you know, the previous day. And I guess I'm just curious, what kind of preparation goes into hosting a daily sports show like this, where you really have to be tuned into every single New York sports headline that there is in case someone calls up about it, or you guys just, the discussion flows there. So what kind of preparation does that involve for you?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I call them like a lifestyle job, because it's not like a job where, you know, you go like 9 to 5 and then as soon as you go home or clock out, you're like, all right, well, I'm done for the day. I'm just going to come back in tomorrow and I'll get back to work. Like, it is almost, it's not 24/7, but, you know, it feels like that sometimes, because you're just want to constantly be keeping up on the news, and things happen. Even at a dead time of year, things are happening. And then if they're not happening, it's like, well, how am I going to dig deeper so I can get a creative spin on what's going on? And to be honest, like, in local media, you're kind of talking about the exact same thing a lot. So to try to keep it fresh, try to find new angles, like, that's always what's so important in terms of our pre-production and all that process. We're constantly thinking about guests that we want to book. And I kind of liken it to, you know, it's almost like every night is the night before the test, you know, and because it's a job where you can't hide. And every day you're getting judged, you know, every day, every show, you're never sure who's listening. You know, we obviously have bad shows and better shows that are bad, shows that are better. But, you know, every day you feel like you're trying to prove yourself to somebody who maybe just turned on the radio for the first time, or for the person who's been listening to you and you don't want to let them down, you know, people who feel like they're part of your community and part of your show, you know, you want to do it for them too. So it's like a constant process, and it's really, you know, you got to take it, you got to give it that kind of attention, especially at the fan, because if not, like, you're going to sink. And yeah. And then, like, as far as like the nuts and bolts of it, like, you know, we have like show sheets, we constantly updating Google Docs, we're, you know, we talk at 8:30 every day in terms of like going over what's our A topic, what's our B topic, what's our C topic, what are some of the smaller stories that we want to get to. Or we, Moose and I will sometimes say, like, I have something I want to bring to you, but I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. Like, I want your genuine reaction to this. So we'll do a couple of those kinds of things. But we flesh out like a lot of the topics that we do. Sometimes our biggest disagreements usually are what's the lead, you know, like today, we didn't even have a disagreement today, but you could have gone either way. Like, do you lead with the Jets in free agency, or do you lead with the Knicks Nets game from the night before? You know, we picked the Jets free agency. We might have picked wrong. I don't know. There's no right answer, but those are the kind of things that we try to get through every day and just to prep for the show.
And speaking of the dynamic at WFAN, and you're speaking of Moose, your host, I'm wondering, so I remember a few years ago when Francesa originally retired and you, Chris Carlin, and Bart Scott got the afternoon drive show. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, Francesa wanted to come back or whatever. He got tired of sitting at home. He came back and they kind of reshuffled everything and shuffled you guys around, and you worked with one of them, and you know what I mean? Like, you had to jump around, then you ended up with Moose. So can you explain kind of how that was, adjusting to constantly having to move around and work with different hosts, and what was that all like behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, it got crazy at times, you know, and I can't lie about that, but, you know, it was the biggest professional break of my career, you know, when Francesa retired and they came to me about, you know, doing the afternoon show. It was like, I couldn't believe it. You know, I didn't even think that I was a candidate for that job. It really was kind of came out of the blue for me. And it's one of the best experiences that I've ever had, even though we weren't in the afternoon slot for very long. And we ended up moving to 1 to 3 with me, Carlin, and Bart. I've made friends now for life with Carlin and Bart. We went through that experience together, and I'm so grateful that it was those two guys that I was doing it with, because I've never worked with just two more genuine people. And we really had each other's backs during what, you know, during a really just unknown, you know, a lot of unknown, and they are just amazing. And then, you know, things that happen, people move on, and it's just kind of the business. And I think, honestly, I think it's made me I'd like to think it's made me a better broadcaster, because no two dynamics are going to be the same, and no two shows are going to be the same. And the show that I was doing with Carlin and Bart is very different than the one I'm doing with Moose. And I'd like to think it's made me more like adaptable. So it's wild. It feels a little like show business sometimes at the fan, more than, you know, like at SI, it felt like journalism, a little bit more like capital J journalism, and the fan's more show business. So you kind of have to expect that you're going to get a few more curveballs thrown your way.
Yeah. I remember most fondly Chris Carlin when he hosted Loudmouths with Adam Schein on SMY. That was like, I listened to the show when he was on WFAN as well, but I just have very vivid memories of watching that show, Loudmouths, before dinner every day when I was growing up. So definitely, you know, that was definitely, I think, a really, that was like the vintage era, like SNY, with like him and Shine hosting Loudmouths. I just remember them going back and forth. And a couple times when I was like in the city for seeing a show or something, we'd walk by the SNY studios. And like, I remember one time we walked by, well, before they were filming Loudmouths or after, I can't remember, but he like waved at me and my mom, and I was like, oh my God. Like,
well, that was the best. That was like stand on the glass and see inside. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So Sports Illustrated, when I first worked there, was in that same building.
Oh, wow.
So we were on like the 35th floor or whatever, and SNY was on the ground floor. So I used to see those guys all the time. And then, like, honestly, I remember getting to co-host with Carlin two shows on Loudmouths. This was like a really long time ago. And I was, when I say like freaking out, like, you would have thought that I was hosting the Oscars. I'm like, I am so nervous to do Loudmouths with Carlin. Like, I couldn't, like, I had to like get a hold of myself a little bit. I was like super nervous to do that show, because I love that show too. And I thought it was great. And the people working behind the scenes at SNY, like, they have such amazing producers and like really smart, clever, good people work at SNY, like really across the board. Like, I've had such good experiences when I've done stuff with them. And they were so welcoming and great. And little did I know, like, years later, I'd, you know, have my biggest break of my career. And like, alongside is Chris Carlin. And honestly too, like, as good as Chris comes across, like, on the radio, and like, that's him, man. He's such a genuine guy and just like a really, just a good like champion for people, like, you know, wants people to succeed, loves talking to young people about the industry. Like, he's really just one of those good dudes.
So now you guys, you and Moose, you lead into Carton and Roberts.
Yeah.
So how has the dynamic been at FAN since Carton's returned, and has everybody been getting along? Is that going really well?
I think so. I mean, you know, we so far so good, you know, I think it's weird because I don't see them face to face.
Yeah.
You know, Moose and I are still doing the shows from our homes. Everyone else is in the studio. They're asking us to sort of stay home for now. We haven't gotten the vaccine yet. So maybe that will change once we are vaccinated, but they didn't want overcrowding in the studios. So Moose and I are still from our houses. So I haven't really gotten a chance to like interact with them, but it's been great for the radio station. I mean, Carton is so entertaining. He's so good at radio. Like, he's so good at radio. It's like a masterclass of how he's able to put on a radio show, and he's just great at it. So it's been fun for the radio station for sure. And I'm like really curious to see like where their show goes next. Cause I feel like they had chemistry like almost instantly, which is really not easy to do. And they did it. And I think they're at like one level, and then they're just going to keep going up and up and up and up. And like, Evan is also like way, it's like James Harden. Like, people think that Evan couldn't do a show another way. He could only do the show like what he did with Beningo, but Evan's so talented. Like, he's so multifaceted, and he can do and play a lot of different roles. So I think they've really clicked. And I like the guys who work behind the scenes with them too. Tommy Lugauer, Chris McMonagall are fantastic. Chris was our board op, but like basically another producer on the show from the moment I got to the Fan up until Carton came back. Great guys. And really just like, I couldn't be happier for their success because they earned it and they deserve it. And it's great for them and great for the radio station.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I feel like, especially for a two-person radio show to work well, you do need some contrast. And I feel like we get that with you and Moose with like the different teams that you guys root for. And I feel like it's interesting because I felt like when Joe and Evan did the show together, you know, Joe was like a little bit more old school, and then, you know, Evan kind of provided a little bit more new school. But I almost feel like in the Carton and Roberts show, it's like Evan's a little bit more old school in some of his opinions, or I don't know. I feel like Carton is a lot of like entertainment value, and Evan's providing like a lot more. It's interesting. He's not more restrained in his opinions, but he's definitely a little bit more like logical some of the time. And so it's interesting to hear that dynamic of Carton kind of, but also then, you know, we talked about like Evan will like fly off the handle at something and Carton will reel him in. So it's interesting seeing you, right. I feel like that is definitely really hard to do with, you know, especially someone you've never worked with. So it's interesting to hear, you know, across the different shows too. I mean, you hear it with like the morning show with Boomer and Gio. They obviously have some like different vibes and like different, you know, not only teams that they root for, but also just different personalities that they bring. And so, you know, I guess it's important to remember, even though it's like sports radio, it's like entertainment, like first and foremost. I mean, that's what sports is like, ultimately it's entertainment. And so I feel like keeping that in mind is really important. Yes, you want to provide solid sports analysis, but there's nothing wrong with like entertainment value, because people aren't listening to sports radio to like, you know, listen to a lecture. They want to be entertained. So I definitely do appreciate when hosts kind of keep that in mind while also, you know, not totally veering away from sports talk, but you know, I don't mind listening to like a sports show that also talks about like entertainment related topics or has like fun takes on something someone tweeted. I don't know. Like, again, it's entertainment. So I'm fine with that being provided to me, and you know, I'm clearly listening, so it's working for me.
It's also relatable, you know. I think those are the moments where it gets relatable. Like, everyone is, you know, you're a fan of the teams that you love, and we talk about sports from like whatever background we kind of came from. Like, mine was more of a journalistic background. Other people have different backgrounds they came from, but like the human stuff, like that's what makes people most relatable. So I think that part of it, it's like entertainment. And also you get a chance to know the host a little bit more when you're talking about stuff away from sports.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love, yeah, even when sports hosts talk about, like, you know, things their kids are doing or, like, other interests they have, I think that's great because, you know, I also feel like that's why people end up connecting with athletes, too. They, people love stories about athletes that aren't just about their stats. And I think, similarly, people love listening to radio shows that aren't just spewing stats at them because, ultimately, people relate more to stories than just sheer numbers. And so I think you're right. That's really important, that aspect of not only storytelling, but also just providing things, you're right, that people can relate to. I love reading stories about athletes, you know, off the field ventures, hearing like what charities they're working with or something cool that they did, or even the story that there was a story in the New York Daily News about some Mets players visiting a deli in Queens last year. And then like Trevor May mentioned it in his intro press conference and, you know, just things like that. Those are just really fun stories. I think there's always room for more of that in sports journalism, whether it's, you know, people talking about that on the radio or writing about it. So I'm all for that for sure.
And you know, I'm so with you on that. And it's really crazy. I don't know if you guys have picked up on this or not, but it's definitely something I feel like I've picked up on, which is, I feel like because the pandemic has really changed how you're able to cover sports right now, which is not being able to go to clubhouses, you know, everything is done over Zoom with, like, you know, the PR person, like basically standing right next to the player or manager. And it's just a little harder. Like, I feel like we're not getting as many of those stories as we used to, you know, it's been a little bit different. Like, I'm noticing it. Like, we're not, have you noticed, like, has there been one spring training rift that you've heard about across?
Yeah. Trevor Bauer throwing balls at people with one eye open.
Yeah. Right. That guy. But we don't
Now I got to edit.
You broke it. The show hasn't even ended yet. And we already talked about it. Oh, well, next time, I swear.
Have fun with this one. Yeah, I feel like we're kind of not getting as many of those stories because we just don't have the access right now. So hopefully when this is all cleared up and we're back to normal, knock on wood, that we get even more of those cool stories. Because I'm with you, Elizabeth. Like, I think those are great and they pull people in and you feel like you get to know the players better.
Yeah, we had Justin Toscano. He's a writer on the Mets beat. And yep. He said that it's harder for him now because he used to be able to go up to guys and get specific stories and stuff. And now – he's talking to them when we see him talk to him, you know, over Zoom, like you said, and it's just not nearly the same. You don't have that same personal touch in a way because, like, even Lindor, like, he hasn't gotten to meet Lindor, the new players, and kind of get that face-to-face interaction. It's all in a group Zoom setting, which you can only get so much out of that.
It's very sterile.
But how has it been for you adjusting to hosting from home all the time compared to being in the studio? I'm sure now you're probably used to it, but was that a tough adjustment at first?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, Moose and I we hosted a radio show together on the CBS Sports Radio Network for a few years. We just did a weekend show together. So we had at least that familiarity. I don't know if we would have been able to do it if we didn't have that to fall back on, because it was challenging for sure. You know, especially when you're trying to just, like, you're playing off the other person, and it can be really difficult when you're doing that through Zoom and through our Twitch channel or what have you. Yeah, challenging. I mean, now it's kind of second nature. It's literally been a year, which is nuts, but it was tough to get used to at first. And I think now we're just sort of like, all right, this is the cards we're dealt. Honestly, I'm saying that word too much. I'm just so happy sports is back. Those few months when it was like March, April, May, June of last year, when we didn't have anything really to talk about, those were the most difficult. That was like the most difficult assignment I think I've ever had in my professional career. And I remember getting like a really nice text message from Ian Eagle after he'd come on the show in a guest spot. And he goes, "You will never have to do anything as difficult as what you're doing right now." And it was just really tough. Like, you know, the games and the athletes, like, they're the story, man. And it was really hard to do without them.
Definitely. I mean, you know, we'll see. Hopefully we can kind of readjust back into normal life, quote unquote, after this. I do have one more question for you that's a little bit more kind of hypothetical, I guess, than some of the things we've been talking about. You know, so obviously you've worked in a lot of different radio and like digital hosting venues throughout your career so far. You know, I'm curious, what's something that you haven't done in your career yet that you would like to accomplish, or another type of role that you could potentially see yourself doing?
You know, it's a really good question. You know, since 2013, I've been hosting some kind of daily show, whether it be at Sports Illustrated or at The Fan, but it's been a daily show every single day for a long time, almost a decade, which is weird. I'd actually love at some point to do some kind of documentary or like a deep dive into one topic, to like really get to take your time with one thing, you know, one story, as opposed to just sort of churning through the news cycle every single day, which is kind of what we do. I think it'd be really great and, you know, an amazing experience to be able to do like a deep dive on one topic or one person or one story and just sort of sit with it for a while, as opposed to constantly having to move on to the next thing in the next show. I think that'd be a really cool change of pace.
Well, Maggie, we can't thank you
enough. That's awesome.
For
well,
coming on with us today. This was amazing to have you on, and would love to do it again in the future. It was great to hear your perspective on Mets, Bauer. We talked about the Nets, the Knicks. We pretty much covered it all today. So it was a really great time, and we can't thank you enough for
coming. The Bills, too, made it in. Who would have thought?
They always do. They always make it in somehow. Listen, Jake and Elizabeth, thank you guys so much. You guys are fantastic, and I can't wait to do it again.
So that'll do awesome. It for this episode of Cohen's Corner. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @Giblin_Jake, Elizabeth at @NYMFan97, and you can find Maggie Gray on Twitter at Maggie Gray. And of course, you can always hear her from 10 to 2 on the Midday Show with Mark Melusis on WFAN.
And that does it for this week's episode of Cohen's Corner. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.